Edric Watch, day two. Welcome to Snap Judgments. This is the Austin and Berm show. He is Berm. I am Austin Ward. And Ohio State was back at it. Practice number two, Friday morning at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And Edric Houston is alive and well.
Yeah, we tried to temper like concerns on Thursday when it happened initially that we don't know. It might just be a sprain. It could be something not serious. I don't know that the answer is not serious, but the answer is certainly not long-term for Edric. He was back out on the practice field. He was dressed the same as everyone else. He did have a fairly substantial knee brace on, but did not do anything movement-wise. The expectation, I guess, from here, if you're trying to set it up, would be that we probably don't see him practicing for a week or two, but there's a very strong belief he'll be fine and ready to go for Texas, and that's best case scenario.
Yeah, Edric Houston certainly appeared to be in really good spirits as he came out. We briefly talked to him as he walked off the practice field. The smile was still there. So I think there's probably, you know, some relief for him and for Ohio State as a whole, given his importance to this team.
I mean, he said that he thought it was funny that people were acting as though he died.
Yeah, and he did not.
No, he did not.
And injuries do happen in this game. But, you know, if you're taking a long-term view of what that means for Ohio State, getting some sort of prognosis and a feel for that is critical. Now, we've seen this before with Ohio State in training camp, not just at defensive tackle and talking about Tyleek Williams for the last couple of years, but what they went through on the offensive line a year ago. There's going to be injuries, there's going to be illness, there's going to be setbacks. And when someone like Edric Houston is not out there, that is an opportunity then, silver lining for other Buckeyes to step up at defensive tackle. Like one name that we, Berm, I don't think talked about at all throughout the summer, that I saw taking some of those reps next to Caden McDonald during team periods today was Eric Mensah. Mm-hmm. He was like, he actually won a good portion of those and looked really impressive. It's like, oh, well, there's another thing that we haven't really talked about. I think Taiwan Malone and Jason Moore is still where you start that conversation primarily, but Eric Mensah looked pretty good. Now the pads go on Saturday. The evaluation gets a little bit different. They'll be hitting. There'll be more intensity, more physicality. Edric Houston is not going to be part of that, and we don't know how long he will be sidelined by that, but it doesn't look like, you know, he also kind of joked, wow, people thought it must be an ankle. Like nobody had any idea until it was evaluated,
but yeah.
He wished it had been a sprained ankle, which might be a little bit of an indication that, you know, the knee situation and the brace may take a couple of weeks. I don't know for sure. I'm definitely not a doctor, but
I've heard
he's not going to be back out there.
I'm not I'm not a doctor. I heard potentially a hyperextended knee. That can be exceptionally scary, especially if you are in that position, that immediate shock. You're like, I cannot risk putting any weight on this. So the reaction that happened on Thursday, I think, was fair, at least as far as the initial concern.
Yeah.
We all try to avoid leaping to conclusions. And thankfully, in this instance, it's not going to be something that's going to sideline him for long. But it does bring up an interesting point, Austin, that take away the fact that Edric needs these reps a lot, because he does. He's only in his second year. When you get a minor injury to a presumptive starter early in camp at a position that has a substantial need for other guys to step up, I'm trying to point out, I think this is a silver lining. I think we actually are going to get a better opportunity. We know that Edric Houston is going to be one of those two starters at defensive tackle. Like, that's not a question. So I think this happened last year with the offensive line. And Austin Saraveld specifically took a hold of the opportunity because of the hand, foot, and mouth disease that was going around to prove his versatility and his
right.
value. And I think that this is an opportunity for Will Smith, for Eric Mensah, for Jason Moore, for Taiwan Malone to really do that and answer some questions for Ohio State. And I think in some way that scare is going to end up being a positive for this team heading into Texas.
Yeah, and I think I left Will Smith Jr. out of that conversation because it looks like he and Caden McDonald are going to fill that same role on the nose. So some of these pieces are starting to fall into place even after just 2 days. Matt Patricia talked after practice, as well as Brian Hartline and the wide receivers group. But, you know, Matt Patricia was certainly asked about Edric Houston and what is going on with some of the way that, you know, the defensive ends are traveling across the field with the split squad work and the defensive tackles. So what, this is an opportunity now to play with a bunch of options and experiment a little bit. And they definitely didn't want to have to do that without Edric Houston being part of it. But I don't think Matt Patricia has ever lacked for creativity with what he wants to do in terms of scheme and personnel. So, you know, it feels like, and he, you know, was deferential, of course, and continues to talk about the way Larry Johnson works with the defensive line group. Like, they don't appear to be concerned. They want Edric Houston part of it. But even if not, they're not stressing that they won't be able to come up with a plan to work around it. Or even when you get Edrick Houston back, you're still going to need more depth that you can build more out of that group as the season goes along.
Yeah, I think the frustration after the initial scare, and we said it on Thursday, Ryan Day had a very different countenance on Thursday at his press conference than he has in the last 9 months.
Yeah.
But the sentiment I heard today from talking to a couple different staff members was more frustration, because the quote that I heard from multiple people was that Edrick had an incredible summer and they were really counting on him just to kind of take that and rock and not have to worry about, like, okay, what if he can't go? But it does open the door for these other guys. And Matt Patricia, you know, he's been pretty adamant. He wants flexibility on his defense anyway. He wants to play a lot of players. So now you have an opportunity.
All right. So practice number two.
Don't we just have to go right back to quarterbacks again?
I think we have to, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the risk of beating a dead horse, like, we don't have to suggest that the competition is back and forth, neck and neck. We think it is at this point, or I do anyway. But today, Julian Sain had the opportunity to work on the same offensive split squad as the starting tackles, as the starting center, as the starting running back, as the starting.
Does that help?
It does help. He looked a lot more comfortable today, getting time to throw and throwing it to Jeremiah Smith and throwing it to Brandon Innes and Mylon Graham and Max Clair. So I don't know that we could make anything bigger out of day one than, I mean, we could, probably could have. I don't think we did make anything bigger of it than it should have been. I will say, and I think you noticed the same thing on Friday, is that if we're talking consistency between day one and day two, Lincoln Kienholz was probably the leader in that category. But again, when Julian Sain has time to throw and has an opportunity to set his feet and get a receiver in their full route, like, the things he can do with the placement of the football are special.
Yeah, I think the way I viewed this coming into training camp, as I'm not trying to just validate my own thinking or get confirmation bias out of it, but I thought probably what is making this situation difficult, challenging, is that I think as it sits right now, the floor and the experience for Lincoln Kienholz is higher. The ceiling, I think, for Julian Sain at some point is, like, as a passer, yeah, certainly, unquestionably higher. You know, if you want to say that there's question about that, fine. That, you know, I think that that is the viewpoint that I've adopted here, and I think a lot, I hope you agree with that. Maybe you don't, but, and that's what, if you're preparing for Texas, what adds to the challenge, because you may not have the fully formed version of Julian Sain against the Longhorns in the Horseshoe, and you may have a better idea of what you could get out of Lincoln Kienholz in that game. Although both are, there's uncertainty with both, given the lack of experience and meaningful reps that either one has had. I think when you moved Lincoln Kienholz from one field to the other based on Thursday to Friday, he was still ripping the exact same slants, same velocity, same accuracy. Have we seen every throw from him down the field? We have not. I think there's a lot that you could still work out. But in terms of understanding the offense and building one around what he does well, I think Ohio State would have a pretty good idea how to do that. What you saw it on Thursday with Julian Sain on the deep throw to Carnell Tate, and you saw it again today with some of the stuff to Jeremiah and working with the full offense. And it's like, okay, well, there are the flashes of high-end accuracy, ball placement, quick release. You definitely notice that with Julian Sain. So that is the back and forth in my mind, is not who's ahead today or versus tomorrow. It's like this level of consistency versus maybe more variance with Julian Sain at this exact moment.
Right. And that's why I asked Ryan Day on Thursday in the press conference, like, how much has the way that he evaluates things changed based on what Will Howard showed him a year ago? And Ryan Day's answer I thought was fairly thoughtful. Like, every quarterback is different. So you can't say, well, Will did this super well, but he was also 6'5" and 140 yeah. pounds. So if Will was 6'2" and 210, does he have the same panache? Does he have the same swagger? I don't know. I asked Bryson Rogers today straight up, like, what's the difference? Because, you know, he was asked, what have you seen from the quarterbacks in the first? Lincoln's a dog. Julian's a dog. Whoever our guy is, it's going to be the right guy, yeah, and they can do it. So I said, what is the difference? And it went back to what we've said repeatedly and others have said repeatedly. The first thing he said, Julian, it's the arm talent. He can make throws all over the field. And he said, with Lincoln, it's the way we feel in the huddle. It's the calmness in the huddle. It's the confidence in the huddle. So I don't know at what point those things weigh against each other directly.
Yeah.
And when they do, what metric becomes more important for the overall success of this team? And so, you know, Ryan Day certainly on Thursday did not indicate a desire to play multiple quarterbacks, but he also did not.
He didn't refute it.
He didn't suggest that he would deny that if it's what was best for the team in week one. So there's 30 days left. There's 23 practices left before we get to the Texas game. We're going to see exactly one more of them.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to tell us a little bit more because there's going to be full pads. But that competition, or don't call it a competition if you don't want to, if you're not comfortable with it, but it sure feels like a real back and forth. And again,
what other name is it? Like, even if you know who's going to win, you still compete.
Yeah, I mean, they're still competing.
I'm not saying that I know who's going to win here either.
We all still think Julian Sain will eventually stabilize and find the consistency, and then that consistency combined with the ceiling means that he has to be the guy. And I think I agree with that. But it also, we can't just ignore what we've seen with our eyes, not just these first 2 days out here as far as the consistency, but what we saw in the five practices we saw in the spring. There was very little doubt that in every informal practice setting we saw in the spring, Lincoln Kienholz was more consistent. And then the spring game happened and Julian Sain was light years better, not just than he was in practice, but then Lincoln Kienholz was that day. So like, you can't ignore that either. And I think trying to find the proper context to talk about this competition, while still acknowledging that we expect Julian Sain will likely end up winning it, I think it's a complete disservice to dismiss Lincoln Kienholz and what he's done, because listen to Brian Hartline talk about him today.
Yeah.
I mean, they love the kid and what he provides. So if he can turn that elite athleticism into elite quarterback play, I feel like you owe it to your program to at least give it a real look, considering he and Lincoln Kienholz have played a combined like 80 snaps in their career.
Yeah.
Or he and Julian Sain, sorry.
Yeah. And certainly not in the most high leverage of situations for Julian Sain, and definitely not in a situation where
Lincoln Kienholz
was prepared or ready or in any position at all to succeed against Missouri in that Cotton Bowl. Give me one person that stood out to you that you were taken aback by.
I mean, I've spent a lot of time this offseason talking about Avell Reese, so I'm going to try to avoid that.
He did tell me that he's not 8 feet tall.
He's not.
I'm not sure,
though. I think he's getting there. He does look taller. We've seen in the first 2 days out here, Caleb Downs moving a lot, but also Jalen McClain moving a lot. And it makes me wonder if Jalen and Caleb are playing an interchangeable role and Jalen just continues to stand out to me. I thought Malik Harford had a really good day one out here. We didn't get a chance to really dive into some of the particulars of the day because of the Edrick stuff and the quarterback stuff. But what I've been most impressed by, and I'm going to try to take a generic answer, when we've seen a lot of guys running laps, which is more than, you know, last year's team. You have a very veteran team, a lot of experience, guys making fewer mistakes. And this is going to sound silly, but when I've seen Ethan Anianoa run laps, he's running laps, you know?
Yeah.
And
he's committed.
He's committed to running the lap. And there are a lot of times, if you've ever been to a football practice, whether it's high school, whether it's grade school, whether it's college, whether it's the NFL, the opportunity to run a lap is like a chance to catch your breath. And he is not catching his breath on the lap, which I think is a really good sign.
Because, wants to get back out there and get more work.
And he's like, it's self-punitive. And I think that that's a really good sign for a guy who has to be Ohio State's not just starting left tackle, but a really good Big Ten player. And he doesn't have the luxury that Josh Simmons had coming in here from San Diego State, where it's like, well, we don't know what we're going to get. We're going to feel this out. Like, this is your starting left tackle, and he better be ready.
It was interesting to talk to Matt Patricia about the secondary and the way that they're, I don't know if they're interchangeable or if they are just in that experimentation mode, but like today you saw not just Jalen McClain moving around and doing some of the things that Caleb Downs did, but also periods of practice where Jalen McClain was out there next to Caleb Downs and Malik Hartford wasn't. And that's not to say, oh, well, day two, I thought Malik Hartford was going to win the job. I'm ripping up this depth chart. I think they're trying to find out what works and what's the best way to deploy that, because we have mentioned this going into training camp, like what allowed Ohio State to play as well as it did in the back end at the end of last year. the flexibility that Jordan Hancock and Lathan Ransom provided alongside Kalem Downs. Yeah. So they need Malik Hartford and Jalen McClain to do the same thing. I believe they need both of them to do that and not just one or the other. So you put them in every spot back there. You know, I think if we factor in the nickel, we didn't get into that on the first day of training camp. You know, we're seeing Bryce West and we're seeing Lorenzo Styles appears to be with the ones, Bryce West with the twos. That's a little bit of a clarification because we saw throughout spring. It's like, well, Jermaine Mathews is going to do this because of Aaron Scott. So far, we haven't seen that. Now, it's 2 days of practice. But, you know, I think there is still some of this flexibility and versatility as they go along here. But just making note of that and what it may mean after two practices. And it may look different again on day three. We'll see.
There's another moment. And this is what snap judgments are for. It's about to try to tell people what we see out here that catches our eye. It's not, this shouldn't be broad brush strokes or assumptions or judgments based on what we think moving forward. But, you know, in the spring, I talked about Philip Daniels and the constant fighting with CJ Hicks, which I thought I asked Philip today because I was standing out here watching the offensive line and I looked out of the corner of my eye and I saw another offensive lineman smack him in the head and then he pushed him back. And these dudes are playing the same position, standing right next to each other. So I was like, that's fascinating. Like it's always the same guy fighting. And so I when they were walking off the field, I said, Philip, do you just like to fight? And he said, he sprayed water in my face.
No.
And he said, we're not out here to play around. I could get hurt. I can hurt someone out here. Like, I want focus. So I was like, oh, at Minnesota, we didn't have as much dudes around, but everything was together and we're going to make sure everything together is here. I was like, huh. He's like, I'm not dumb. I'm not just trying to fight people to fight people, but I'm not going to let people mess around at practice. And I said, hey, okay. And it was way more than I anticipated getting out of that question, but it was actually pretty insightful.
Also, his sparring partner, CJ Hicks, they are often the last two on the field together working on, you know, pass block techniques and pass rush techniques together. So it's sort of like a brotherly rivalry. You're allowed to hit your brother, but nobody else can.
CJ, because he was over near me and Philip when that conversation
happened. Yeah, because they were trying to get their work.
And he said, and I quote, I didn't take it personally because Phil wants to fight everyone. So I don't know. But I, the explanation from Philip Daniels was really encouraging because it's showing a guy that gets it. Like, this is not playtime. And you get 25 practices and you better be out here taking advantage of it. And if you're getting someone spraying you in the face with water and it pisses you off, smack him upside the head.
There you go.
Good for him. What else really caught your eye day two? Anybody, any position group, any?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're always fascinated by different apparatuses that are being used, different tools, drills. We didn't really talk on Thursday about the steering wheel on this show. I know you wrote about it at Letterman Row, but what is the impression that you've seen in those groups?
I like when new coaches arrive at Ohio State, not just with new ideas, but new tools and toys. And so what Tyler Bowen has here is it's a steering wheel. It's heavy. It's not a steering wheel. It's metal. It's iron. I don't know exactly what it's made of. It's heavy. And it's got sort of like the Harry Potter Deathly Hallows logo inside it. So you're going in and getting hand placement, core strength, hand placement, torque, stay on balance. I've never seen it before. I'm sure that he didn't invent this. Yeah. I don't know that for sure, but I'm really excited on the 12th as we get 2 weeks into camp to talk to the offensive linemen about Tyler Bowen, about that entire coaching staff that's working with the offensive line, the way they've broken that up for some individual drills and what they're doing. Because I think, I think this is going to be the deepest. You mentioned Philip Daniels. Like, he's probably still not going to start at right tackle. There's a lot of progress going on, and there's a lot of technical stuff that they're working on with Tyler Bowen that's new and exciting. Like, you can see them getting better and more confident and enjoying all that, but like, they still have to go out and actually do that on August 30th against Texas in a really good defense. So, you know, that even the way that we talk about Austin Saraville, he's not been a full-time starter. You know, you talk about Ethan Onyanwa, this is still new, competing on a day-to-day basis for Ohio State, but it's just cool to watch. I enjoy it when they come in with the new ideas and you see something, it's like, huh, I wonder why they're doing that.
I think one of the most interesting things about this specific team, coming off of a national championship, coming off of everything, all the departures to the NFL, like, there are so many things to talk about on a day-to-day basis. And we're going to, obviously, we're 15, 16 minutes into this episode of Snap Judgments. And the best position group in the country spoke with the media today, and we haven't mentioned them at all. Jeremiah Smith spoke, Carnell Tate spoke, Brandon Innes spoke, Bryson Rogers spoke, and David
Mylon Graham
and David Adolph all had conversation. I'm going to be very honest with you. I didn't talk to a single one of them other than Bryson Rogers for a moment. Was there anything takeaway from that group, from Brian Hartline and his 15, 20 minutes that, I mean, other than a lot of people were interested in Brian Hartline's pool parties and pool basketball.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting look into the psyche of these kids and their coach. But what what really caught your ear? What was lighting your ears up?
I think that we've spent a decent amount of time speculating wildly about what the offense and the play calling is going to look like. And apparently that's the easiest part of the job. So, and
did he agree to that?
I know,
did he get asked about that?
I know better than to ask Brian Hartline about that. I think...
Yeah.
2 years in, the irritation level, and I know the answer. So I didn't get into that with him. I didn't think it was necessary. And I know that Brian Hartline is confident in his ability to do that. So didn't go down that road. Pretty interested in, you know, as he tries to establish relationships, not just with the wide receivers, but with the quarterbacks and how that's all going. And, you know, in his own way, he's like, well, that's what I've always done. I mean, yeah. I need, as a wide receiver, as a player, needed to have that chemistry and understanding with the quarterback. I need to see the game the same way that they do. So there had been some questions, and we got emails about this as well. It's like, well, most great offensive coordinators, like, they have the quarterback perspective. I think Brian Hartline can see the game that way. I think he's long spent, you know, hours understanding the passing attack and what a quarterback is looking to see from a wide receiver. I think he comes at that from enough of experience point, even if he's not the one throwing the football, and he can talk to his brother if he needs to. I mean, they can get some insight on that. I don't think he necessarily needs that. He's also got Chip Kelly and Ryan Day and a good relationship with Keenan Bailey that he can lean on all of that
and
stuff.
And Billy Fessler.
Yeah, so like I don't...
Colin Keanu.
I don't worry about it. I don't think Brian Hartline is worried about it. It's still going to be a new path for him in his career. It's certainly intriguing and one of the more interesting subplots as you get closer to August 30th. But, you know, it was like a normal Brian Hartline press conference. It was like a normal J.J. Smith press conference. Brandon Innes is still speaking up for that group as well and wants to do that maybe more so than Carnell Tate and Jeremiah, which is great. I think that dynamic makes a lot of sense. So it's going to be – we're going to talk about it more as it gets closer, and we're going to get talk to Brian Hartline again throughout this month. Like, hey, what's it still like wearing this headset? And he's like, it feels totally fine. I'm normal. I'm good with it. I've done this before. And that's good. I don't think that he has to go into tremendous detail about that. And I understand why.
I found my pointless mission for the year. I like to find pointless missions, whether it was getting Marv to dab or
failed mission,
Chip Kelly to twerk,
failed mission,
whatever. I watched Jeremiah Smith and Brandon Innes wearing tall black socks today.
One tall black sock for Brandon Innes.
Well, that's because it fell down. So for the younger generation of fan back, I think I'm not, don't quote me on the game. Someone out there will tell me I'm right or wrong. I think it was 1995 against Penn State.
Okay.
And Ohio State decided that day to wear black socks, black shoes with their uniform. And it was beautiful. And I was like, that looks sweet.
Okay.
And then I saw Jeremiah and Brandon doing it today. I was like, hey guys, like you're making me feel like a 17-year-old again, because I remember this combination and it still looks awesome. And then I remembered that Ohio State lost that game pretty badly.
Oh.
And so that look has never returned.
Yeah.
I am now making it my pointless mission to get one game this year with the tall black socks and the regular home uniforms, maybe the heritage stripe uniform, if we can work that out, because that's when it will look the best.
Okay.
But that's my mission, because it looked awesome.
All right. Well, we made it into the second practice of training camp, and Berm is already trying to...
Pointless mission is underway.
Shape the wardrobe and the celebrations for Ohio State. We're all the way back, folks, and it feels great. We have one more open practice. That will be Saturday morning.
Physical.
Berm and I will be here. The pads are going on for the Buckeyes. So another snap Snappy J episode will be coming your way on Saturday. This was Friday.
Yeah, but if you've like, man, I just want more of these guys today on Friday, we're going to co-host the Buckeye Show tonight, 6 to 8 on 97.1 The Fan and YouTube.
Also on YouTube.
So stick around. We don't know exactly what we're doing there yet.
It'll be the first Austin and Berm show live.
Yeah. I think
we're just going to rebrand it. Nope, we're not allowed to do that. It'll be the Buckeye Show. This is Snappy J's. Fully snap judgments on the Austin and Berm show. Really excited to be back out here for practice number 3, and we'll break all that down for you tomorrow. For Berm, I'm Austin. We will talk to you then.